If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the living love, light, and sound of the Supreme Creator. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, we want to look at trust, respect, relationships, and making peace with oneself, life, and the world. So if you're ready, let's take a deep breath. And just bring yourself into this moment without distraction and just quietly be here now. Open yourself, if you will, to the Divine Spirit, because tonight we're going to provide an opportunity where you can release judgments that have kept you just this side of being at peace with that which is. Peace shall prevail. And peace in this process of transformation is gradually replacing mental and emotional agitation and physical conflict, and making peace with ourselves and our life and the world as we live it each day in this moment is part of that, because that which is not peaceful is always wrought of the separated self that never is quite content with the way things are. It always has an agenda of wanting to make it different, change it, make it, it thinks better, because it, the ego, assumes it knows what's going on, which, of course, it doesn't. So in moving through this transformation, there's a lot of excess baggage, obsolete habits in the way we approach life that we can just let go of. We don't actually have to fix them or do anything about them. We just need to recognize that this is not peace. And we could have peace instead of this particular whatever it is we have an againstness towards. So let's open ourselves to the possibility that grace could just dissolve a whole bunch of againstness agendas that we're running against ourselves, others, relationships we're in, the whole kit and caboodle. Let's just allow some space here for that which transcends us to come in and bring that transformation from within, which we allow simply by being willing to participate in a higher level and quality of life. Peace, by the definition of spiritual insight, would be based on the quality of our life and about a state of inner peace where we're just simply okay with everything. Not only okay, we're really at rest, where there's no agitation. It's not apathy. It's a dynamic state in which that which is greater can simply bring forward miraculous things, because we're not meddling. We're not throwing in a spanner or a monkey wrench into the works. We're flowing with present potentiality, I guess we could say, because you don't plan. When you're in that flow, it's so dynamic that it creates out of its own momentum things that we probably wouldn't even come up with if we were trying to allow our ego mind to run the show. So it's a new thing that's happening through us. It's a new way of receiving the greater life that Jesus promised was ours, that more abundant life. Now, the ego determines, I would say, success in terms of how much power you have. how much money, how much influence. But the Holy Spirit would ask you, are you enjoying your life? Are you in a state of enjoyment? Are you at peace with yourself? So many people have problems and issues with self-acceptance. They're not at peace with themselves, with their body, their gender, their appearance. They've got all these judgments running about how they should be. And, of course, acceptance of yourself and what's going on in your own life, we have to come to terms with that before we could have peace with anyone else or with the world as a whole. So mainly this lack of self-acceptance arises from ignorance of the fact that our current lot in life is entirely our own design and election. You might ask, everything in our life? And the answer is yes. Everything down to the smallest detail is exactly as it was meant to be for our highest good and maximum spiritual unfoldment. There are no accidents, no coincidences, no mistakes, no happenstances in life when viewed from spiritual insight. Now we choose upon spiritual levels before we incarnate into the physical dimension exactly what we desire to experience. Soul is all about experience, any kind of experience, every kind of experience. Every single thing in life, regardless of how we may judge it, serves in the soul's ultimate unfoldment as a God. So we've come in to experiment with different consciousness scenarios. We've come to explore and research. And we embody into time, space, and forgetfulness, so we have a clean slate that's not conditioned by prior knowledge of what's going on. And so we step from that now-ness of spirit, in which we already are all that we'd ever wish to be, into time, which is really the past. For Earth is in a time lag when we seem to be working out for the first time what has long since been completed in spirit. And that is why people, places, things can seem so familiar. They are. We've already done all this before, and often with the same classmates. So, why then are we here, doing this again? Well, it might surprise you to know that even if you are a master, you will come back sometimes just to go through the process to take a refresher course, so to speak, or to take another approach in time, working with a different civilization, a different life wave of souls that are in incarnation, to fine-hone and fine-tune your mastership abilities. And in one sense of looking at it, all souls are masters, because they're already incarnations of divinity, simply pretending that you're a limited human being in time-space. But this affords you the most unique opportunity for developing levels of consciousness and awareness that you couldn't any other place because of the amazing diversity that Earth offers. Other planets, I can't speak for all of them, but the ones that I have personally visited and remember visiting, the civilization is pretty much the same. For example, my brother-in-law was from Mars, and he said that on Mars, any kind of negativity was treated as a mental disorder and was programmed out of the person by light and sound technology. Now, it's very interesting. He incarnated on Earth in order to experience the freedom of having negative thoughts and negative feelings if he wanted to. But the funny thing is, he became a very beloved and well-known unity minister. What do unity ministers teach? Positive thinking. So he couldn't quite override his own programming coming from Mars to Earth. Now on Venus, which is my most recent home, everyone is loving. Everyone is kind. Everyone would be, to the Earth's interpretation, fully enlightened, fully aware of their divinity, always treating each other with great reverence and honor and respect. It's just part of our way of life. In fact, Venus is in the golden age. It's in the state of vibration that the Earth is gradually spiraling into, because the relationship that the Earth has to Venus is like the relationship the personality has with the soul. So as Earth moves and spirals up in its transformative process and raises its vibration to the next level of learning, it's going to be in the orbits of Venus. It's going to be partaking of that Venusian solific quality, which is purely loving and peaceful. So people like myself that come from Venus are extremely, very uncomfortable when there's disharmony. Very uncomfortable. Because our nature is to automatically restore harmonic resonance. You know that great song by Simon and Garfunkel from the 70s, I think it was? I lay me down like a bridge over troubled water. I will lay me down. We do that. We lay our lives symbolically down like bridges over troubled water. Wherever there's a disharmony or disagreement, it's just as natural for a Venusian to do whatever it takes to restore harmony, to bring that quality of peace. And I think you can recognize the Venusian, at least I can, by that radiant quality of joy and peace that they carry with them, wherever they are. And we have many Venusians right now, and Martians, and people from other planets, living and working in our world today. You might not even notice any difference, except they have an uncommon way of expressing goodwill and respect wherever they are. They treat everyone with great respect. They honor everyone and their unique divinity, whether or not they remember their off-planet origins, and most of them do that come here directly, unless they're born like me in a physical body, then we can tend to forget. But the point is, they have a quality of radiant peace about them. Their faces aren't all twisted in worry and concern and questions and all of that. So be aware, that person working next to you in that cubicle or wherever may very well be from another planet. May very well be. So be aware that brothers and sisters from more advanced civilizations have been incarnating on this planet for a very, very, very long time. And since about the 30s, the 1930s or so, more and more have been coming in preparatory to the current transformation that we're going through now in consciousness, which will again bring the Earth into a higher state of expression. and manifestation. Because according to the elders of all the indigenous peoples, the earth itself will be transformed back into a green Edenic state. Now, exactly how that's going to happen, I'm not real sure. Our friend Onik from Venus, who came and densified her astral body to live in our world in the 1950s, who is also a friend of mine and a fellow Venusian, she said that the people on Venus had gotten at one point to a state very similar to the present Earth, where there was warfare and conflict everywhere. And they corporately decided one day to walk out of their factories and wherever they were involved and just create a new life. And they left everything. They walked out of their cities, their factories, their war machine making whatevers, and they created a new life for themselves. And that new life gradually transformed into what became the astral plane of Venus, where you could manifest things by thought. You could fly. You could change your body and morph into anything that you wanted with a thought. And everything was beautiful and completely unlike the life they'd had before, because they took their consciousness to a higher level and literally brought their bodies into that vision and began to manifest it as their new state of reality. Now, she said that it took some time for that to occur on Venus. It was gradual. But we, she said, here on Earth, are actually doing it very, very rapidly, but it's been something that we lightworkers have been working on for at least the last 2,000 or more years. It is the reason why Sananda Kumara came onto Earth in a physical embodiment as Jesus of Nazareth, to set that template in place. It is the reason why Shirdi Sai Baba, Satya Sai Baba, and now Prema Sai Baba, the third Sai incarnation of the avatars, will be inaugurating and presiding over a golden age. So we're moving into that time when peace shall indeed prevail, and all things are being made new, and we, lightworkers, are part of the light team that has brought this into manifestation. There will not be a third world war because you and I came. Not only you and I, but those of us in, what could we say now, millions, far more than 144,000. There are millions of awakening light workers and light bearers that are working every day, attuned to the divine, attuned to their soul purpose, and living it in the world, and bringing transformation wherever they are, activating the people that they move with all the time. They're activating and quickening those codes of living light and living love and living sound that make us all embodiments of God. And so, thank you. Thank you, every brother and sister that has contributed to where we are now today, which, regardless of what you see on the news, is really phenomenally encouraging. It is absolutely wonderful where humanity is right now, looking at it from a soul viewpoint. There has never been this much light on the planet and this many people consciously aware that there's something more and greater than their physical bodies and their physical life, although their physical bodies and their physical lives are making this transformation possible, because the physical planet is the springboard to higher consciousness. You have to densify fully in order to ascend out of this lower dimension. So this is why the physical human body and its complete scope of emotional possibilities of expression, its unlimited scope of envisioning and thinking and moving to extraordinary places within its own creative abilities that makes Earth life and Earth consciousness within the human being so unique. And that's why the Master DK in the Alice Bailey books was quoted to have said that every single thing, every life form, either has been human, is currently human, or is aspiring to become human. Yeah, is aspiring to become human. So to have earned a human birth is extremely fortunate, and especially to be living at this time. Oh my gosh, are we the blessed ones? Now, according to some of the teachers, John Roger, Drunvalo, and others out there, have said that all souls that have been coming in since, oh, say, what, 1974, 75, come in as the new species. They come in with no connection to the past karma, the past momentums. Many of them are coming in for the very first time, and maybe thousands and thousands of years, or maybe they've never ever had an Earth incarnation. Maybe they've come in from the angelic realms, or very high Devic realms, or maybe they're a regent or a prince or princess from a far-off galaxy. Maybe they're a master like my late husband from Venus. Now, there was a man that lived in an aura of peace all the time. I can't recall him ever being angry. He was always centered in this aura of profound peace. And he was a master from Venus. So, I have had some good reference points for what it's like to live in with a person who is always connected, who is always working in the seeing and knowing and being of soul awareness. He didn't have any conflict or issues with himself. He lived in perfect trust. And although there was times when we had a great deal of money, and times when all we had was a quarter to our name, and he never worried. He never, ever worried. He always knew that everything is at hand that we need. And so I would say another characteristic of an extraterrestrial here, living in our modern-day world, is that they don't worry. They don't worry because they know that they live and move and have their being in the divine. And the divine knows how to take care of itself, wouldn't you think? So, just saying. So, give a look at yourself and check and see if you are running any patterns of againstness regarding how you look, your gender, your race, your state in life, your age, your physical condition, whatever, and make peace with it. Forgive yourself for judging yourself, for not knowing what was going on with yourself. Because to tell you the truth, the only thing we ever need to really forgive ourselves for is losing sight of our own divinity, of forgetting who we are. We lose sight of it because our sight is distracted by the outer world. And so that's why we need to keep bringing the mind back to truth. Return the mind back to the loving. Return it to the truth that you remain as God created you, in original innocence and peace. Return it to the truth that right now you are indistinguishable from God, that your nature is godly and divine, now and forever. It's not what you're going to become. It's what you are now. So bring everything home to truth, and there'll be no need for judgment. You'll see the perfection of everything. So life on this physical planet is designed for people to work out their problems and issues through direct personal experience. It's like we forget who we are, which of course creates lots of problems and issues, because only people who forget who they are have these problems and issues. Otherwise, you simply have things that you need to handle. And when you're aware of who you are, you simply do what's necessary to handle whatever it is. But it's not a problem. It's not an issue. So we learn through direct experience. You can't phone it in. Somebody can't give it to you. You can't get it from a book or a seminar or a study course. It's hands-on learning down here. You have to live through it, experience it, and then you know that you know, and no one can take that from you. So relationships are part of how we learn. People in your life are there because you have a learning assignment together. They have to be there. They have to have the personality and the faults and whatever they have so that you can work out stuff, which is the whole purpose of being here anyway. So everyone who is on this planet probably has some problems or issues that are problematic for them, or else they wouldn't be here. So even those of us that are extraterrestrials that come down here to serve, as in my case, or to just live as a way shower or example, whatever, they will take on some kind of an affliction just so it will lower their vibrations and also make them more user-friendly, so to speak. Because if you've noticed, egos really resent it when somebody looks too perfect. They hate it. You know, they'll try to suppress or to sabotage or to take you down if you raise your head above the crowd. You know, we see that in, you know, all the great souls that come largely from other planets, like Nikola Tesla and Martin Luther King and Jesus the Christ and, you know, Krishna, Rama. You know, the great, 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 great avatars and souls, Sai Baba, they all come from higher planets. Many of them are Syrians. So you come into this planet and you try as best you can to be in harmony with the people around you. Not that you take on their bad habits. You live true to yourself. But by the same token, you don't stand out like, you know, goody two-shoes either. You get a little, roughed up. You act a little ordinary so people will feel comfortable and you'll be more approachable. So sometimes the faults that we have are assumed parts of our disguise, so to speak. They're assumed parts of our issued equipment in coming into this earth mission. So who are you to judge that? You know, why make that wrong just because it's different? So begin to accept everything in your life as exactly the way it's meant to be. It is perfect. Yeah, the disability. Yeah, the handicap. Yeah, the disease. Whatever. You are there in that form, in that expression, in that manifestation to be a light bearer and a way shower. And even if you sit you know, with a body that's completely incapacitated to where you can't do anything at all with people, you will still, regardless, be serving in that particular arena to activate, to awaken, to quicken the codes of living light and living love. Sometimes you go in to rescue a soul that's really caught in some labyrinth of consciousness and they can't get out. Many of you who have people in your family that are severely addicted to drugs or alcohol or whatever, many times you will incarnate as a child or as a relative or as a spouse specifically to help that soul get out of that pit that they have gotten themselves into. Probably with every good intention to simply go in, have the experience, and get out. But then sometimes you get sucked into it and you need some help to get out. This is what Lord Sananda did, Jesus the Christ. That's why he came in, because we had created the story so intense in Atlantis, such an intense story that we got, and when I say we, I wasn't there, I don't think I was anyway, but a lot of the people right now on the planet were there and got sucked into what later became a karmic field that they couldn't get out of. So when Jesus came, he just took all of that on himself and remitted it, blocked it out, blotted it out, and made a clear path for us without reference to that past. And that's what the great, great messiahs and avatars do very often. Although because of what Jesus did, we have the opportunity now to make the transformation, or the ascension, as some people call it, or the paradigm shift. It's all the same thing. Or the moving into the fifth world, or fifth dimension. See, the language differs, but what we're doing is the same thing. We're moving to a higher state of life and quality of life and expression, which is predominantly peaceful and supremely loving. It won't have the old conflict. So I want to speak a little bit about respect and trust, because we honor and respect what we give our full attention to. So we respect and honor what we give our full attention to. I've enjoyed watching some of the dog training shows with Cesar Millan, a dog whisperer, and also a show on horsemanship by Chris Cox. And you might know I spent my teenage years as a circus equestrian and worked with all kinds of animals and dogs and everything. You name it, I've worked with it in terms of an animal. And so I find it very interesting that these people that are working now with animals are emphasizing the importance of gaining trust and respect of our dog or horse by learning to be a calm and assertive leader. And that's what we're in training for, too, to become calm and assertive way showers. We embody the ways of living a more God-focused, God-centered, egoless life. Not that we've all attained that by any means. Like I said, you have to act ordinary to fit in with the people here. But that's basically what we resonate in our energy field. That's what we actually are beneath the costume that we're wearing as that person, personality. So I learned a lot watching Cesar and Chris gain the respect and trust of their animals and teaching dog owners and riders alike to be calm, assertive, and respect-worthy leaders. And with both dogs and horses, respect is shown by their giving full attention with eye contact and by moving their bodies toward their handlers. And the exact same response is shown by humans when they interact with one whom they respect. When we truly honor and respect another person, we will give them our full attention. We will stop and lay aside whatever we're doing, turn off the TV or whatever, turn off our cell phones, and give them our undivided attention. And we'll turn our bodies toward them and present ourselves in an open position. We won't have arms, for example, closed across our chest, which is one way of protecting the lower consciousness and also shutting people out. So body language is very, very much open towards someone we respect. And we will look at them as they speak, maintaining eye contact, and we will listen without interrupting, without contradicting or correcting what they're saying. So often people do that, and it's very disrespectful, it's rude, and it's a play of power rather than an expression of love. It's the ego wanting to have the last word or being the know-it-all. So consider, if you will, how you are received. Do people listen when you speak? Is your voice heard, when you speak in a crowd? Do people you are with honor and respect you by giving you and what you're saying their full attention? Or do you sometimes feel like you're talking to yourself and no one is paying any attention to what you're saying? You know, you're familiar with that if you've raised teenage children. Some of them come to a point, probably all of them, when they tune us out and show disrespect and dishonor. So you know what? We have to gain trust and respect anew with our teenage children, because they've gone at the age of 14 when that permanent Adam activates and they get back their previous knowledge. Now it begins to download their previous personas, their higher personas. We have to become acquainted with the children at a whole different level when they reach their teenage years. They go from being the obedient little adoring preteens to being this person we don't even hardly recognize anymore, and we have to earn their trust and respect again. And sometimes we violate that because we do not respect their space and their right to be their own person. We want them to fall in line with our agenda, our interpretations of what they should do with their lives and how they should run their lives and how they should think. And any child that reaches the teenage years will not allow you to do that because you're encroaching on their right to be their own person. And you're committing a spiritual error because you're encroaching on their space and you're violating their consciousness and their privacy. Yeah, when you go into your teenager's room and you look in their drawers and you look in their diaries and so forth, you're invading their space, and they're not going to trust or respect you if you don't trust and respect them. It's really a slippery slope when you're raising kids. But I'll tell you, if you haven't built-in character in them in that first 12 years of their life, you might as well forget it, because it's going to be really difficult to try to get through to your teenagers when you haven't built any kind of a foundation when they're really young. And it's not that it's impossible, but whoa, it's hard. It's uphill from there on. So we must learn to respect everyone, everyone who reaches the age where they're becoming their own person. We have no right to tell them how to live their lives or to run shoulds on them. You have to treat them with as much respect as you would a complete stranger. And your actions are going to be more significant than your words at that point. You have to embody a transparent life where you own your stuff, you apologize when you step into ego, and when you violate another person's privacy and space, You learn to own it, to cop to it, to say, okay, you know what? I really blew it. I really disrespected you in doing that, and I ask you to please forgive me. You know, I'm learning too. I'm not perfect. You know, little kids think you're, you know, mom and dad is God and they're perfect. And it's only when you get to be a teenager or something that you realize they're just souls here learning just like everyone else. We're all doing the best we know how with what we've got to work with. We all are. When we know better, we do better. So we have to cut each other a lot of slack because we're all figuring this out together. It's a classroom we're in, and we're not alone in that. So another thing, many of us who are starseed, I know I sure felt this when I was a child. I felt spiritually older and wiser than those around me, which may or may not have been the case, but that's how I felt. And so I didn't have a lot of confidence and trust with most of the people around me because I sensed they were spiritually immature. I just sensed that. And these new kids coming in will often feel the same way about the older generation, if they say so. They feel like they're more in sync with the times than the parents. And in many cases, this is true, but not always. It's just a different generation of souls comes in to do a different job assignment. And it is different. It is not quite in sync with what has come before. That's why the millennials today that are on the planet, if you've noticed, are also having relationships of mentoring by millennials like themselves. It's like they are co-mentoring each other. The same with the indigo children, the same with the crystal children. They have their own network, their own way of communicating, their own way of learning, you know, how to work their lives and to fulfill their missions. Now, another thing, you've heard the phrase, familiarity breeds contempt. Well, when it comes to the ego, that is certainly accurate. And we can lose the respect of others by allowing them access to us personally that they have not earned. That's where you let a person get too much information, get too close into your personal life and business, and they have not earned that place. You know, when a master takes you in tow to train you as a disciple, you're kept way, way, way on the periphery of that master's consciousness. The master only works with masters beneath that master's degree of initiation. The ones that work with the people coming into the training for the first time are older disciples. And then the initiates work with the disciples beneath them. And so it's always the one just above that works with the one below and brings them up. And then we're all connected in that ascension process. But it takes a long time for a disciple to earn the right of direct access to the master at all times. It's called being a son of the master, S-O-N. Lord Ashtar is a son, S-O-N, of Sananda Kumara, by definition. He has earned the right of direct 24/7 access to the master's innermost state of consciousness, to where they're almost one. And that is earned. How? By obedience, by respecting and honoring and giving full attention to the master for a long period of time. One of the ways that we really, really sabotage intimacy with the master is by divulging personal details about another and violating their consciousness by their doing. by therefore doing that. For example, whenever I hear someone name another person and then tell me personal details about their past and the things that they did that were less than wonderful, let's say, their mistakes, their shortcomings, whatever, I will never trust that person because I know I will not be safe with them. And if I would then divulge some of the things from my past life, I would know for certain that it would not be safe in their mouth. They would be sharing those stories with other people. You can call that gossip. You can call it slander. But it boils down to making judgments about another person and defining them in terms of their past, which we have no right to do. That's why when the woman was brought in the act of adultery by the elders that were living in the village at the time where Jesus was living, and they brought her to Jesus and wanted him to condemn her by the law, which required her being stoned, by the way, not in a good way, with rocks. He said, "Woman, who judges you?" And, you know, she expected him to stone her. But he told her that her sins were forgiven, to go and sin no more. But he said before that, he said to the people who were around her, who had brought her and thrown her at his feet, "Let whoever is without sin cast the first rock." And of course, they probably had all been with her because she was taken, I guess she was a prostitute. And one by one, they dropped their rocks and walked away. And then that's when Jesus said, "Woman, who accuses you?" And there was nobody standing there. And then he said, "And neither do I. Go and sin no more." So the point is, it was to get us out of that old binding law of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth and vengeance for vengeance, which is still so very much a part of the mentality of certain people in certain parts of the world. They're still in that old law of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, and that vendetta consciousness that Jesus the Christ came to completely transform and transmute into forgiveness through grace. The path of grace is the path of love and mercy. And the fact that he had wiped the slate clean. So if we muddy it again by judging ourselves and judging others and violating people's privacy and conscience and consciousness and the things that we do just because we're asleep at some part of ourselves and we're not in sync with what's happening, which is the dawning of a transformative period in which we can't bring these old habits with us. We can't import vengeance and judgment and criticism and bad-mouthing and gossiping and slandering and hating and killing and destroying. None of those frequencies are going to be able to exist on the planet in the rate of vibration at which it is now ascending. The vibrations are getting so powerful now that people are, they're either wigging out and doing insanely violent, crazy things, or they're gradually tuning out. I think really that's the cause of Alzheimer's. I really do. And the different dementia forms, I think it's because people are not connected with that higher soulific energy. And the instrument, you know, it can't connect. I may be wrong in that. Forgive me if I'm stepping on somebody's territory or toes here. But it's the old thing, if you don't use it, you lose it. And the mind is supposed to be a window through which the soul can operate. It's another one of those apertures which we can use that funds the creative energy of the Supreme Source through the mind, the mental body. becomes illumined and in perfect sync with the program and plan of the soul, of the Atma. And when it isn't fostered and that connection made through meditation or some form of spiritual practice, I think it loses the ability and begins to atrophy like all things, you know. They become weak from lack of use. I've never known a meditator, I mean a really good meditator, that became senile. And, you know, when I started this work back in my early 20s, I was with people who were close to 100 years old in some of my early arcane school Alice Bailey classes that I taught. I had people in my classes, actually, 80 on up, as well as youngsters. I had people of all levels. But, you know, to me in the 20s, somebody that old was like really, really, really old, really ancient. And yet they were sharp as a tack. I remember Florence Garrig up in Ojai at the Meditation Mount. She was 100 years old, and she had worked with Alice Bailey personally. And she was sharp as a tack. But she meditated. She did what's called occult meditation or esoteric meditation, where you build in the antahkarana, that inner connection between the lower mind and the soul, through specific practices. That's why if any of you want to study that, you can join the Arcane School. They have online courses now that you can take. But it's excellent training for the mind and making those inner connections so that you get the most bounce for your buck, and so to speak. Not that they charge anything, they don't. But what I'm trying to say is that when you meditate, you might as well get the maximum benefit from it, which is unbroken attunement to the divine, unbroken continuity of consciousness, where you know that you know and you're connected and the soul is downloading the divine purpose that you've come to fulfill. So again, honor the privacy of others. Practice the law of silence when it comes to the faults and the shortcomings of others. Never talk about them. I mean, sometimes we do forget. And let's face it, you know, the ego gets a little evil, little desire to, little satisfaction sometimes. And we have to nip that tendency in the bud because it's going to turn around and bite us. We won't be left off the hook. So when it comes to relationships, they are learning arenas in which we need to practice great honoring of the sovereignty of each soul to live and love and work and express as they deem best. As long as they are not creating a problem in your life to where you have to take some sort of action to direct them, leave them alone. Let them be. Let them live how they need to live and to learn how they need to learn, because something far greater has set that plan for that soul intact for each incarnation. And don't worry about people. Don't worry about your children. Have the confidence to know that God and the masters of the spiritual hierarchy are supervising every single person on this planet and their spiritual transformation and enlightenment. We all have masters. We all have angels. We all have disciples and initiates that are higher than we are that work with us on the inner planes as well as often in the physical. They don't come with labels. You have to discern where people are by their works. not so much what they say, but you watch them, how they live. And by that you can recognize a disciple, or a brother and sister from a more advanced civilization, or a master. By their fruits, you shall know them. So be a good fruit inspector. But in the meantime, remember that what you judge in another, you're fortifying in yourself. What you have judged, you are bound to, until you either forgive yourself for judging yourself in that way and release it, or you're held accountable. Now, I would suggest that you become really practiced in course correcting. When you speak out of turn, immediately own it. Has to be forgiven. Course correct right then and there. Don't even wait. And clean up after yourself. When you have an unbalanced exchange with someone, apologize, call in the light, and clear the space, clear your consciousness, and clear your relationship. If you can't do it with that person, then do it. You and God together do it. Keep yourself clear. Be trustworthy. Be honor-worthy. And live a life so that when you speak with such a sense of confidence in the divine within you that people stop what they're doing and they give you their full attention because they know that this is not an ego speaking. This is the voice of truth speaking. And the voice of truth will be heard by those who value truth. And the rest you don't have to be concerned with. They're not ready to listen, but they will someday. So honor and respect them anyway. Love them anyway. And I hope this has been helpful to you. And let's go out chanting an IU. Deep breath. And the spiritual travelers are just now releasing a tremendous purple light, a violet light that's going out now through your consciousness. So just close your eyes and receive it. And just offer all the judgments that you've made against yourself, your life, the world around you, others, your intimate relationships, whatever. Just take a deep breath. I release all the judgments that I have placed out knowingly and unknowingly. And I ask that they be transmuted as I forgive myself for judging myself in all these many ways. And I ask to be taught how to live an unconditional loving acceptance of myself and that which is. And just turn your hands out and send blessings from your palms to all life forms and all the worlds. And may all awaken. May all have lives that are full of meaning and purpose and delight and enjoyment and peace, peace, peace. Blessings of Shanti, Parashanti, Prashanti, expanding peace, all-encompassing peace to each and every one of you. Namaste.